This week, my guest is a fashion critic with a clear and sharp point of view. Today, he's going to give us a glimpse inside the fashion industry, and he's not holding back. Ladies and gentlemen, Angelo Flaccavento. Angelo, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks.
You made a name for yourself by being very sharp and have a clear point of view. Is that something that you pursue when you're writing, or is just the best way to express yourself?
Of course, when you start writing, you have goals in life, but I think I do not belong to the school of thinking that you can get to your goals right away. I wanted to have a voice that was recognized by other people, to have my specific point of view, and I worked very hard on that, but it took a long time for me to get there. But this long time also allowed me the time to for this to happen in a very natural way. So let's say that when I first started writing those roundups and reviews, I already had like 10 years of experience behind me. And plus that, my very hard and very specific schooling in art history and critic of the arts. So I think that I had the time to hone my point of view, to sharpen my point of view, and to find the right way to express it.
I like what you just said, and I agree with you, the point that you don't believe that things just happen overnight.
Which I think is what happens today, you know? Everybody wants to be a fashion critic overnight. You cannot be a fashion critic overnight because you need to have experience, you need to see things, you need to be informed of things that happened when you were not seeing them. I mean, what I noticed that even my, let's say, schooling, between commas, that happened in the 90s when I was just a student but was still buying fashion magazines and I was like devouring them because there was no internet. So you need to have with yourself that copy of the Face magazine or ID magazine for one whole month because there was nothing else that you could read that month if you were interested in fashion. Even those looking at the pictures of the Helmut Lang or Margiela shows, that has been a schooling for me. So I have a memory of the time that was an analogic time. I have memories of the digital time that happened because I started writing in 2001, which was schooling too. You need to have seen many things in order to be a critic. Of course, your point of view maybe will be the same with or without the experiences, but the experiences, the visual experiences, the memories help you to have a stronger voice and to motivate your choices with something that's meaningful and not just based on taste.
When you see in the fashion world, they've very much been embraced. All the fashion houses very much being somehow involved in embracing the bloggers, the fashion bloggers and influencers. Do you think this is something that's going to stick around?
Oh, I don't think this. I mean, I think it's going to stick around for a little while still, but influencers basically are just the digital evolution of all the testimonials. It's not people who have real original thinking, and they're just basically there to flaunt the products that fashion houses lend them for free. So, I mean, I remember very well when the first blogs came out, and it looked like it was the revolution because finally there was a way to publish ideas and opinions free from the mainstream channels. Basically, it was all self-publishing. But fashion can be very seductive, so it has a way to lure people in. And so bloggers started morphing into this kind of models for outlandish or very silly looks, and they got adopted by fashion houses just as an instrument for publicity. I think that commerce basically is what makes this industry stand up, but commerce can be made in a much more meaningful and intelligent way. I mean, all the clothes that have been produced have always been sold. But now it's just about the brutality of the act of selling. And the brutality is also using these people who have really no charm for me. I mean, I have nothing against these influencers, but personally, I find them very bland, very devoid of any personal style. They're just like living mannequins, and then they jump from level to level just in order to fulfill any advertising duties and get their presence paid.
Well, you have a very unique and personal Instagram, in my opinion. Do you feel pressure that you need to be more involved and engaged to keep up?
I mean, of course I do think about it, but I'm at this point of my life, I came to the conclusion that you're either equipped for this or not. So I'm not, I mean, I think honestly that I'm very niche in the sense that what I write, the way I am, the way I write, the ideas I express are not for everybody. And I'm very happy about it. I mean, many people hate my writing. They find it too rich or too blah, blah, intellectual. And I'm perfectly fine with that. So I'm very happy with my small audience. I'm not bothered about being engaged differently in social media because that would be very forced on me. And I wouldn't be interested in exposing myself in a different way. You say it's right. My Instagram is very personal and very abstract in a way, but I can tell you that it expresses more about me than if I post an endless stream of selfies. You know, so I think that is the tone of voice that I think suits me as a person and as a writer. So I'm not interested, of course. And also, I see my colleagues, journalists that I respect, that maybe are older than me, that are desperately trying to embrace this instrument, which is not good for them, and they don't know how to deal with it. If I can make names, I mean, I have great respect for Susie Mankis as a writer, but the way she handles her own Instagram is a little bit desperate, you know? Because you can see that, I mean, she's an older woman with a certain mindset, and she cannot, I mean, selfies are about catching the audience with a certain flirt. You're flirting with your audience, but you cannot flirt past a certain age, you know? Or maybe you can, but you have to be also aware that you can get ridiculous.
Now, the interesting thing, because you know her personally and a lot of those people personally, so you can tell if it fits the personality or something forceful, but the audience who perhaps hasn't had the chance to meet some of those people, they don't know that, right? They don't know what kind of person
you're right. And this maybe is a limit that I have, because maybe people are just interested to see what Susie or the other journalists are doing, what kind of milieu they're diving into. So it's, in that sense, it can be very interesting. But also, you know, we journalists live, I think the life we lead is kind of special because we're being flown here and there for events or shows most of the time. And it's very outlandish flights. You fly business, you're put in the best hotels. But as I always say, it's something that I really enjoy and appreciate, but it's also, I'm living a 5-star looks life on loan in a way, because it's not something that I would do on myself. So I feel very, not ashamed, but I'm very careful about not exposing that too much, because I feel like a passenger to this, almost like a stranger. This is that Islander feeling that I was talking about at the beginning of our conversation. So I enjoy being part of the system, but I also need to be outside of the system. I want to look the system from the outside, because when you're trapped in the inside of the system, you take everything for granted. While if you step outside, you can be a little bit more critical and still be part of it, but also be aware of something that's specific to your milieu, of something that is very different from what people you normally do in their life. So if you've noticed, I never tag the events or the show that I attend in my Instagram. I mean, those are the experience. Also, I don't want my Instagram to be the diary of everything that I do. I want those experiences to be, those experiences are for me to cherish and to take something from and to digest and transform into something, some thinking. And I don't need to expose. I think that the culture of overexposure can be a little bit dangerous for writers as well. Because as I was telling you about the bloggers, fashion as a fashion intended as a kind of system, but also as a monster, as a way to lure you in. So if us journalists seek exposure, then fashion brands can reach us out and lend us pieces of clothing. But as a journalist, I cannot accept pieces of clothing for free and then go around at fashion weeks and tell people about the labels that I'm wearing. Every time I get photographed at fashion weeks, I'm just wearing things that I have bought. It's my personal wardrobe. I've been approached by countless fashion houses to have them build a wardrobe for me for fashion weeks, but I always politely decline because I cannot accept that. And that is that mixture of culture, commerce, journalism, being a blogger, influencer, journalist is really too dangerous and something that's defining this moment of the fashion culture.
Now, do you feel like some of your peers hold back and take it easy with their critique in writing just to make sure they're still part of the club?
But it's something that also me on a personal level always face, because people, as you told me, people like my very honest and frank reviews, but I always add, they always like it when it's not targeted to them, because when it's targeted to them, they get a little bit upset. So I've personally had my fair share of bad experiences, like not being invited to shows because of the previous review or something I said. I'm fine with that, but also it's a very knotted situation, so to speak, because you want to have your own tone of voice and be honest and be clear about your opinions. But in order to be honest and respected, you need to have a high level player, and to be a high level player, you need to attend all the important shows. But if you're being too harsh to the important labels, then you're being cut. You start being cut away from a few shows. And the less you see, the more your opinion becomes weak, because, you need to see everything in order to have a proper opinion, you know? So it's very delicate. So sometimes you just need to tone down your opinion. I mean, I do that a lot in my Italian writing, not just because in part for specific requests from my newspaper, which is called Il Sole 24 Ore, and it is the Italian Financial Times, because one important thing that I want to state is that for me, it's very important to be honest and open when writing, but this honesty is not something that I flaunt and in order to be perceived as a hero. It's not about me. I hope that my honesty helps the system grow in a better way. So it's never about me. So when my editors at the newspaper tell me, listen, Angelo, you can express your opinions, but they need to be expressed, even if they're not positive, they need to be expressed in a gentle manner, because if you are too harsh or too direct, that could put in danger the advertising income of the newspaper, because we all know that now newspaper base their surviving on the advertising they sell, not the circulation in the newsstands. So I know that if I'm being too harsh, I put in danger not only me, but also all the people who work in a magazine, in a newspaper. So what I do is that I express the very same opinion in a different way. And I can do that in Italian, as I told you, because the Italian language, I mastered that in a different way than English. So I can write things that are, how can I say, that are like double-edged in the sense that if you read once, they look like something positive, but if you read between the lines and you become a master of insinuation, you can have the same opinion expressed in a very mild way. So that is very important for me. I know, I always need to know the outlet I'm using to express my voice. Business of Fashion has built its reputation on being very direct and open. So I can be very, I mean, that's what the international readership expects. So it's perfect for me to write in that very unpolite way sometimes. In Thailand, I cannot do that, but I'm fine with that too.
So at no point you feel that you're being censored with what you can and cannot say. You can say whatever you want to say as long as you choose your words carefully.
Absolutely. I mean, the day that I will feel censored, I think I will it will start a fight or an argument with my editors.
Well, I don't have to tell you that the calendar for the fashion world is getting crazy. More shows every day, more collections, it's nonstop. Now, you're about to start a whole new season. Tell us about your trip calendars and what you're going to be doing in the fall.
I mean, that's the very hard. So in a couple of weeks, there will be New York Fashion Week, but it's still pending for me because I still not decided if I will go there, because New York Fashion Week is a very long, but to be completely honest, the long trip and the draining schedule does not reward me with the very interesting things. So basically, if I skip New York, it will start from London, which lasts about like 4 days. Then it will be Milano Fashion Week. And back to back, it will be Paris Fashion Week. And this will end on the 3rd of October. Then I will have like 4 or 5 days of rest. And then I will fly to Shanghai for a Gucci event. But I'm managing to extend the trip and stay like 1 week for Shanghai Fashion Week, because last year I was there for Shanghai Fashion Week and I thought it was very interesting, and it was my first foray on a fashion week that was not part of the official, you know. The four capitals are New York, London, Milan and Paris, and then very rarely do fashion weeks outside of these four. But last year it was very surprising for me to see the energy and the level of creativity that was in Shanghai. So I thought this time, okay, so I'm in Shanghai already. I will definitely try to stay for 5 days and look at the local fashion week. So, and this time of the year for me, it's really grueling because basically I'm on double duty every day because I see all the major, the big shows, and also not so big shows, because for me, a fashion week is also the hunting territory to find something new. So basically, during one day, I do file 2 or 3 single reviews of shows to Business of Fashion. I file at the end of the day, around 7 p.m., an article on the day to the Italian newspaper. And then at the end of the week, on the last day of the fashion week, I file a long roundup article to Business of Fashion. And of course, all of this happens while I'm in the car and waiting for shows. So basically, I'm not very social when I'm going to shows, because I use all the time that I have to, in between shows, to write. And I write. And I think that technology helped me a lot, because when I started, it was like portable computers, but now I can write my articles on my iPhone.
Interesting that you mentioned about Shanghai. I think it really gets overlooked. I was at Design Shanghai earlier this year. I was invited to speak there. And I think the same way, I had the same feeling that you had it, that there's a certain level of creativity and innovation going on that it really gets overlooked.
Absolutely.
So I think people need to pay more attention to that market for sure. There's a lot of young creative people that's coming up with very interesting work.
Absolutely. And because most of these creatives have been schooled maybe in very good European schools, because they have no local tradition for design schooling apart a few schools. But then they went back and they have the production means to give life to their visions. But also the territory is like virgin. So I can see the same kind of enthusiasm, energy and fearlessness that there was in Europe like in the 70s and 80s when the fashion system was taking shape, you know. So but also they have the technological means, and there is a freshness. They have no preconceptions, which is what we have in Europe by now. That makes things very fresh and very engaging and very creative.
What are the other things in the fashion world that you were excited about?
Oh, what really excites me about the fashion world is that this constant surprise, I mean, this constant hunger for something new. It's not always satisfied, not every season, but more than other industries, fashion is constantly moving. So it's very exciting because in this constant move, you also need to move in the sense that I have a certain taste and a certain point of view, but I need to adapt to the times. So I cannot be solid as a rock. I need to be liquid in a way. And I like that because it's an industry that constantly challenges you to move forward. And I always think that, I also have the privilege to write for different kind of publications. So the newspaper the reviews of Business of Fashion are always about the right now. It's always the gut reaction to something. But I'm not afraid to change my opinion along the season, because sometimes what you don't like at first hand, then you try to you digest or you speculate about, then you still don't like 4 months later, but maybe you find another key or another angle to read it. And that's very rewarding for me. I'm very, I'm a Gemini, so I need to have constant brain stimulation. And fashion offers that.
I'm a Gemini as well. And I'm always fascinated how people hold you so accountable for something that you said it a few years ago. It not allowed you to improve and evolve. I mean, opinions and ideas are supposed to be evolved, you know, as opposed to take shape and form. So it's okay to like one thing and don't like anything else later. It's okay to change your mind and improve, right?
Absolutely. And I think coherence is important, but coherence, as people normally perceive it, is overrated. Being coherent is not being solid as a rock or as concrete. Being coherent is to have a certain set of rules and values in reading things, and then to adapt those values to the outside world.
What are the things in the fashion world that you wish you could change?
Oh, I think this whole overexposure thing comes down. I mean, when my fascination with fashion first started, it was very difficult to get glimpses of what a designer's life was, no? I mean, you had ideas, of course, that they were leading a pretty spectacular life, but you had no clues about it. Now, designers, of course, seems to be more accessible, but this accessibility comes with a diminishing of their charm. I mean, now you see them, we're all human, so they're human, after all, like us, but you see them as human in the great and in the small things, and sometimes the fascination completely evaporates. So I wish that this overexposure things comes to a close. I hope that that whole influencer culture somehow evaporates very quick. And I hope that the overpower of stylists, over designers, will find a new balance. I hope that creation and not hype becomes very high on the agenda soon.
Earlier, you mentioned how brutal the industry can be in the calendar. And I do want to talk to you about something that's I've been thinking for quite some time. I'm not a fashion insider like you, obviously, but I have a lot of friends in the industry. And I know it's a very high demand, high pressure industry in terms of performances, sales, exposure, and all of that. And I see a lot of creative people, famous people as well, has openly struggled with addiction, drugs. And, you know, and every once in a while, we see cases like Kate Spade, even, unfortunately, Alexander McQueen. Do you think the industry can and should do a better job to take care of its people?
I mean, I think this not only affects the fashion industry, but the whole contemporary world as a whole. I think that we come from that contemporary culture is all about performance and success. Failure is not even an option, which is what leads people to take drugs or eventually commit suicide if they do not perform or they don't feel that they're performing well in their lives. I think that failure should be reevaluated, because failure helps you grow and evolve and be stronger. So it's, I think it's, I mean, the demands of this industry are really too high, and we're constantly under pressure. I have the privilege of being, as I told you, of being inside and outside. So when I'm back to Sicily, my stress level falls down, you know, because I'm not stressed anymore. I'm completely detached. But as soon as I put my feet in Milano, even not during Fashion Week, I feel a different kind of pressure, and it can be very daunting in a way.
I think as a society, we need to be allowed to make mistakes, right? And fail.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I've learned more from my mistakes than from my successes.
So do you...
And I think...
Tell me more about that. Tell me more about the mistakes that you made and things that you've done that made you better.
I mean, the first articles that I wrote for the Italian newspaper were really too rich in prose. And my editor who is one of my mentors, was very harsh to me, telling me, Angelo, you cannot write this thing because you're... I mean, and she explained... Because, I happen to be a journalist while writing. I didn't go to journalism school. Now there is no journalism school for fashion writing. Now there are journalism schools in Italy, but there was none when I started. And also, I started writing, but my career was like really happening one article at a time. So that was a big failure for me. And it took me some time to try to find a way to express myself properly and not trying to be the big writer with the crazy words on a newspaper. And that was a fail. Of course, when I got that call, I was a little bit, it felt like a big failure for me. But from that, my way of writing evolved in a significant way. There have been articles that for magazines that have been rejected because I missed the point, or they were not exactly on focus. And it was hard to digest, but in hindsight, that was where I learned what was good and what was wrong. It was the best schooling, because if you learn while doing, then the lesson is absorbed very quickly.
One of the things that we see these days are people who are leaving school and immediately starting their own business and their own fashion brands. And there's not much of an apprenticeship or an opportunity to learn from somebody established already. Do you see the same thing happen in Europe? Because in the United States, I think that's more these days, people just want to hit the ground running and not allow time to understand not only the creative part of it, but the business aspect as well. You know, it's very difficult sometimes for a creative person to be a administration person as well. It's a two different sides of the brain. So not everybody can do it. And starting from the beginning, you might have to do it all.
Absolutely. Also because the system has this hunger for new names every season. So one student leaves school and immediately they start their own label. Well, for me, the apprenticeship time that you can have at a house of any kind is very important. Also these new names that we see, they last for 2-3 seasons maybe, and then they disappear. And then some of them, if they have talent, they reinvent themselves or they end up in design studios or everything. But there are also people who quit fashion for good. So I think that you cannot be prepared to work in fashion right after school. For me, experience of any kind is important. It's also important to be brave and be on your own, but it's very important not to fall under the spell of I'm the new name and success will ensue from this. Because that is one of the dangers of the system, that people are being seduced by the idea.
They believe their own hype.
They believe their own hype.
What do you think about the Supreme fever?
Oh, I think that's typical of fashion. I mean, it all started with that very on point Louis Vuitton Supreme collaboration, and now everybody wants to do something that has to do with hype and high-end streetwear. It's all about marketing. I think it's very, I mean, and then if you just follow those footsteps, you're being just a follower. I think that really creative people or innovative people need to be leaders and maybe find some new ways and some new angles, you know? So it's, I think that has a lot of, fashion is all about, is always torn between rebellion and convention. And one, what is rebellion at one point becomes convention the season after, you know? It was very groundbreaking when we saw that those red Louis Vuitton bags on the catwalk. And then the season after, and so it was rebellion in a way. But then the season after, everybody wants to do something like that. So it was convention. So I think it's very silly in a way, but it's a mindset that we cannot easily avoid.
It's almost like saying this, I think I read one time, is that trending is the last stage before it becomes tacky.
Absolutely, yes. Absolutely.
Can fashion labels separate their artistic vision from their business side?
Oh, I think that one label, for me, it stands for creativity, consistency, invention, design, authenticity is recurrence. I think, I mean, I'm always amazed by the way, by, and I'm proud to say that, I mean, he's an American designer based in Paris with an Italian production base behind him. And I'm always amazed by the way that his business team built the business in a way that he can be free to do whatever he wants, but that whatever he wants somehow turns into a business. Because he's free and then he has people around him that can help the business go smoothly. And that is very, very rare for me. Because Rick Owens is a designer who invents shapes, who works on shape. He's not a stylish designer like most of the designers working today are. Of course, his taste is very specific and in a niche, but it's also, it looks very gothic and very dark on the catwalk, but there is a lot, there is a very, because Rick Owens is a pattern cutter, so there is a very classical base to what it has. There is a genuine appreciation of classic dressmaking behind it. So if you look at the clothes in the shop, they're very different from what they look on the catwalk. There's the same clothing, but it's something that can fit a very different audience than not just the fashion goths. And I think that's a very unique. Comme des Garçons too is a very, for me, it's a very unique label because, I mean, there it's different. Then there you have the catwalk show, which is very the cream of what they do, which is completely bonkers and crazy. And then there is a lot, many ranges of product below that that can be sold in a easy commercial way.
I do want to hear your opinion about two things. I see there's a movement now about creating unisex collection, and also I think a lot of companies are trying to be more sustainable moving forward. Is that something that will last, or is that mostly a marketing campaign?
I think that the whole sustainability thing at the moment looks like a trend. I mean, of course we all hope that the industry becomes more sustainable, but on many levels it is not. So there are brands and labels that are flaunting it as a, but mostly it's a communication tool, as a marketing tool. As for unisex, I mean, there, it's a reflection of how we live today, and this, it's clear that the divide between the visual divide between men and women is becoming weaker and weaker. So in certain cases, it's quite this kind of androgyny is quite authentic. I mean, in the case of Gucci, the aesthetic is very a blend of everything. So it makes perfect sense that the men and women almost look the same on the catwalk and even into the shop. But in some other cases, it's just a way to remarket or rebrand a label just to make it feel au courant for the moment. But it's just, it's always a problem with fashion, I think. There are certain things that are authentic, but these authentic things are appropriated by some and turned just into marketing tools. And when this happens, it's very dangerous, but because when something becomes a marketing tool or all the talk of the season, it's like the end of it, because everybody talks about it, and then next season it's like, okay, what's next? Let's go.
No, things are moving too quick, right? It's always the next hot thing coming up.
Yes.
Now, for you personally, where do you like to see yourself in the next 5 years?
Oh, crystal ball. So I hope to continue, like, I would like to hope to continue what I'm doing as a critic, but also I would like, because I think it's important, I think that the industry and the labels need critics or curators with a not visual but mental, conceptual point of view inside. What I say that I think that there is a space for curator within brands and within the industry, because usually designers work with stylists or art directors, which are visual people, which is fine and it's perfectly important. But I think that what I see in many labels and in many angles of fashion is that there is no ideas, there is a complete like lack of concepts. And that is something that I think that a critic could bring to the industry. So my goal is that somehow to internalize my views within the system and hope to work with someone who feels an affinity and try to transform the critique into something truly constructive within the industry.
Would you ever consider writing anything else outside fashion, perhaps architecture, design, product design, interior design?
No, but I would like to write literature. I would like to write something about I like to observe people. I think that at the core, what my job is about is observing and creating some kind of taxonomy in my mind and then regurgitating it as writing. And I love to observe people and to observe the way people behave. So it's more maybe about sociology and literature than other things. So I that could be an interesting outlet of expression for me.
Talking about writing, I'm curious to know, what's your favorite book?
So I don't have a book that is important. I mean, no favorite book that I would recommend about the fashion business. I still haven't found one that really, I mean, all my ideas come from reading writers that write about other things. But a book that's very, I mean, it's so difficult to find one, because I think that the books that we like are always related to the moment in time when we're reading. I mean, have you ever read a book twice in different moments of your life? It looked completely different. I mean, this happened to me. No? And what was a favorite book when I was 21 has no meaning for me now, maybe.
So let's keep it simple. What was the last book you read?
Oh, I always have a stack of books because I need to read many different books at once. Now, the one that I'm really interested now in how society controls us, controls our views, and how we feel free. But I think that the digital culture is free, but we are more conformist than we ever were. So I reread recently, I don't know what is the title, it's Michel Foucault, to Sorvegliare e Punire in Italian. But I can't remember which is the title in English. It's to, I will Google now, okay?
This is a topic for a different podcast. I'll tell you what, next time we do this together, we're going to have a whole conversation about, because I'm very much interested as well, about sociology.
It's about, this book is about the building, conceptual building of in society of the prison as a place where criminals should stay. But what's really interesting for me about this essay is that the prison is the place where the convict is stays to be corrected and to amend for what he committed, but it's also a reflection of a society, of what society considers to be the norms and It's all about the normativity. It's all about what is right and what is wrong, what is deviance and what is not, you know? And it's very interesting because it can change a lot over over the years. And it's always, I mean, I work in the fashion field and we always, and fashion is very, a very political language, because fashion clothing is the first filter that we put between ourselves and the society we live in. So certain choices are very hard and very difficult to make, and they can be received in a very harsh way by our peers. And because maybe I feel in a certain way and I want to wear a skirt, but a skirt still is not considered acceptable for a man to walk about in the streets. But why not? So it's all about the norm and what about is considered normal or not. And it's, I mean, I'm really interested in this kind of subjects.
Are you familiar with the philosophy of determinism?
Yes.
So it's pretty much the point of view that there is no free will, right? That everything that we do,
yes,
is based,
absolutely,
on private experience. So if anything, yes, is normal to you in an early age, it will be normal to you later on, and that will influence your decision. So I'm also very interested in that. We're going to have to do this for sure in the next time. I do want to thank,
absolutely,
you for taking the time. I appreciate it. I'm in Milan quite often. I know you're a busy man, but let's stay in touch. Maybe next time I'm there, we can get some coffee and go more deep about that. This conversation should be fine.
Absolutely.
Now, tell everybody how they can find about you on social media and read more about your articles.
So you can find me, I'm just only on Instagram as Poetically Punk, all one word. And just to be, to make it contrary to the usual way on social media, as my profile is private, so I need to accept you. If you want to, I will. And then you can read my articles in thebusinessoffashion.com. And I write in Italian Vogue and L'Uomo Vogue, and occasionally on other publications that can be Purple, or I have an article in Rika magazine in the UK out soon. I mean, it depends, but the one I mentioned are the my main outlets of expression.
You are a busy man.
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, Angelo Flaccavento. Angelo, thank you very much.
Thank you, Yuri.
Hey everyone, make sure to like, comment, and let us know what you think. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.